Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a little warm. It's summer.
It's,
it's all good. It's a Friday afternoon in the summertime. We're hanging out. You sound like you're not poolside. You're going to TCA next week. But you sound a little bit like you're poolside now, because I think you got, like, you know, teenagers at your house or something.
Yeah, I have a ruckus in the background.
Yeah,
yes.
It's fine.
A dog and a fan.
Let's pretend that you're poolside.
Okay. Yeah, like a poolside and, yeah.
Yeah, you got a drink.
It's pretty with summery.
An umbrella in it, maybe. I don't know.
Well, I would probably have a nice chilled orange wine.
There you go. Beauty. Yeah.
Beauty.
I'm all
or
for
rosé.
That.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, nice. Yeah, so here we are. Now, this is the Into the Breach after this. You are going to head down to become in residence for the summer press tour. And just before we started, we made the executive decision that we're going to do this podcast from TCA while you're there. And it's just, we're going to find a way to make it happen. We're going to find the time. We're going to find the internet connection. If I have to call you on the phone, we'll do it that way. We're going to make it happen. We're going to do it.
We will do it. We you know, it used to be ages and ages ago. This is a pretty different podcast. I could never deliver on that promise. But lately, I've been pretty consistent. Lately,
yeah, I mean, we have been. Yes, famously, when in the Chronicle days, they loaded you up like Benny gave you the equipment, and you took it down to TCA, and then there were no podcasts from TCA. But since we've been doing this one, we have managed to. You know, sometimes we fight the hotel Wi-Fi. That last time, famously, I had to call you back on the phone to finish the episode. But we'll make it work. We'll figure it out. I got plans. We'll make it work one way or another. And you're gonna have the time, because you're not gonna try to, like, go to every single session of on every single day or anything like that, because you would die.
Yes.
And so, you know,
that
it's
was
like
the
a
old school me.
A healthier, wiser Tim Goodman at TCA.
Yes. That was I could do that when I was a younger man working solo. Now we've got like 17 people there from THR, so we're good.
Yeah, the TV team at THR is kind of amazing. Like, your reporters, you got two critics, you got reporters, like, you're all over it. So
yeah, there's often seven of us in a room. Yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah. So we got one review to talk about, which is Insecure, which I also saw tweets go by on basically like, oh my God, this is such a great show. And this season two is just as great, even more great, but it's like, it's a must watch. So tell me about Insecure, which is on HBO, because I've not seen it.
Yeah, it was really good last year as sort of a breakout comedy. You know, it's kind of funny. They launched them at the same time as Sarah Jessica Parker's Divorce. And so, which was, you know, by far and away their big picture or their big comedy, promotional device at HBO. But, you know, very quickly, I'm, and I don't know about everybody else's review, but I'm pretty sure that the review, I know my review is terrible of that show. Cause it was more drama and it's like, Thomas Hayden Church seems like he's playing in a comedy, and, Sarah Jessica Parker seems like she's playing in a drama, and it had all kinds of problems. But meanwhile, their counterpart, Insecure, with Issa Rae, it was just so much better, because it just felt more real. As you know, she kind of really worked her way up. It was the first time that HBO had not the first time, but they hadn't had a great track record with their comedies and having a diverse cast, and Issa Rae's African-American woman. And, you know, she sort of gained fame. Well, she did gain a lot of fame actually on YouTube. I feel like I sound like I'm 100 on her YouTube channel, where it was called The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl. And then she had a New York Times bestseller of the same title. And, you know, after The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl and, her kind of star was rising, there was a little something trying to get going at the network level, and then they couldn't. But much to HBO's gain, her struggles in trying to get the show launched, I think, kind of made everybody who thought she was going to be a star and wanted to, you know, kind of manage her correctly, got her into a position at HBO where she could make the show that she wanted, reflect her topics. And I think it came out pretty fully formed in that first season. She plays a character with the same name, Issa, and she's working at like an educational nonprofit. advocacy group. She's in a kind of a kind of going good, but not super great relationship. And she has friends. It's basically, it's a slice of life thing, just like Louis and Master of None and Atlanta. And I think last year she really stood out. It was very, very funny. Throughout the season last season, the other characters started to become better written and branched out and more fleshed out. But this second season that's just going to start this Sunday, I saw the first four episodes, Jason, and it's like it absolutely knows what it's doing. It has fleshed out the supporting characters. The show has always been really good at casting really small parts and getting really finely tuned actors who kind of get what she's trying to get at. It's just funny. It's very relatable relationship-wise. And I just think there's not a whole lot of shows like this on the air. But it's totally earned. Everything here is totally earned. The laughs are great. She's a real star, and I think that she was a breakout star last year. I thought she was probably going to get nominated if she was lucky. You know, maybe if they had expanded the categories to 10, she would have. But next year for sure, I think.
All right, so HBO watchers, check it out. You got a whole season if you missed it, and then the new season.
And it's pretty easy to catch up. Yeah, if you have HBO Go or now, it's pretty easy to catch up. And obviously, they only come out once a week, so you could binge the first season and then catch up by the first two episodes of the second season, and everything would make sense.
Oh, nice. Anything else coming up that we should note?
You know, Dan has a couple of reviews over at THR. People should go check those out. But I think, right now, I think it's a little bit of a lull. Game of Thrones is really the dominant thing. People of Earth is coming back. Now, that I will totally be into. That starts Monday.
When I was in San Diego, I saw they wrapped one of the hotels for Comic-Con in People of Earth stuff. And we actually have a letter later, a very quick letter about, or a tweet about People of Earth. Dan reviewed. Yeah, he's got a bunch of reviews over there. People can check that out at Hollywood Reporter. If you click on TV and then TV reviews, all the reviews are there from all of the critics. So you'll get your Midnight Texas review and your Room 104 review and your Loaded review. Those are all in there.
And Game of Thrones. And then I'm Sorry and Salvation. And he did Ozark because I know Jason, so I couldn't do that. But yeah, there's a ton of them over there.
Yeah. Did you watch Game of Thrones?
I did watch the Game of Thrones, and I loved it.
Yeah, me too. I do that. So one of my extracurriculars, I don't just do the TV Talk Machine, I've been doing for the last couple of years is same night recap review thingy of Game of Thrones, which we did the next night because of me being down in San Diego. So I'm back in the saddle on that. And what was great is that I got to watch it. My wife and I watched it in the hotel room on Sunday night before we went out to dinner. I attached my iPad to the TV and did HBO Go, and it worked. Totally worked. It was amazing.
Wow.
And we really enjoyed it. And I knew I wasn't podcasting about it for another day, so I didn't take notes or anything. I just watched it as a viewer and watched it again the next day with my notes ready so that I could talk about it. And so it was a little bit more relaxing of an experience than sometimes it is when I'm actively, it's different if you don't have to write about it or talk about it than if you do. And I'll tell you, what you said, it's still great. I love the whole thing. I really enjoyed it. I am so impressed. Like, this cast was not this cast when it started, but now you look at it and it's like everywhere you look, there's some amazing performer with an amazing character who's really settled into the part after all this time. There's some great dialogue. There's some great speeches. There's some great scenes with no dialogue. and I think I heard some people complaining that nothing happened and it was just table setting. It's like, oh my God.
Wow.
Like other than in like some of the momentous ways of things happening and also the character interactions and setting people on these new arcs of how their characters interact and what the issues are between them going into the rest of the season. Like I didn't really, there were people who were slaughtered that did happen at one point and before the credits even rolled, but like there's so much in there. It was so deep and smart and like, you kind of like chalk it up and be like, yeah, sure, Game of Thrones, that's a good show. I know I like that. And then you see a brand new episode and you're like, oh yeah, this is why I love this show. It is really good. just, I was reminded as I watched it, like, oh no, there's a reason why I love this show. It is amazingly done, like, on all writing, acting, the way it's shot, the money they spend in the on the setting. It's just amazing.
It's just, it's like so super strong, and I'm with you on that. Like, I didn't think it was slow at all. I'm at the point now where that used to be my complaint during the middle. It's funny, because I always thought, and for me, it moved too slow because the story was going so slow and it was still doing the books. And
right.
You know, I would very, you know, we've heard this rant from me before, but I would say, hey, like, you know, 30 seconds of one character and a minute and a half of another, it's just so unsatisfying. And but now that it's off the books and rushing towards the end, it's moving at a great clip, I think. Mm.
And the characters, one of the advantages of killing so many characters off and bringing so many characters together is that we got like five different narratives in that hour. But it basically had all our characters in those five different story areas, or
yes,
four or five story areas. So everybody got like 10 plus minutes of airtime, because there aren't 15 different storylines at this point. Everything is kind of coalescing, where you've got, you know, you've got the wall with the, you've got so you got the wall, you've got John, you've got the Lannisters, you've got Daenerys, and you've got like the Hound and I guess Sam in Old Town.
Yeah,
so you got six.
Yeah, there's some comedy going on
with Sam. And that, like, for a 60-minute episode, you could just basically, oh, the comedy was so great. Again, chamber pots and soup bowls. But six storylines, that's 10 minutes per storyline. Like, they have everything has kind of come together to the point where they have so much more momentum now. Even if they tell everybody's story, they've got momentum, which is great. Like, it's so much better than it was when they were kind of slogging through setup from the books. So,
I feel like they're definitely out of the mud and they're moving forward and things are kind of like racing to its conclusion. There's a little bit of sadness to that too.
It's true.
You know, it's funny, my daughter's starting to get caught back up again, and she's finished the first she had just got through everything but the finale during school, and then watched the first season finale like a while ago, and now it's already in the middle of, or towards the end of the third season. She's just plowing through it. And I was like, yeah, I need to do that too, because I really miss this show, even if it's not even gone yet.
Yeah, I hear you. We should talk about, speaking of Game of Thrones, about the press release that came out from HBO about Benioff and Weiss, the producers of the show, mm-hmm. who are announcing basically their next project, which is kind of funny because they've got another year on HBO, but they wanted to announce that they're working on what potentially could be a next prestige product for them. They're not involved in the Game of Thrones spinoffs. They don't want to do that, but I got the impression that they might like take some time off, but apparently not. They're going to start working on another HBO series. HBO wanted to get them locked up. And what was interesting, it's complicated. So let me tell the story here. So
yeah,
they put out a press release, mm-hmm. and the press release is about a show called Confederate. And the idea is that it is an America where the first Civil War was fought to a draw. There was a second Civil War at some point early in the 20th century. Tensions remain high between the Confederacy and the United States, and a third Civil War is imminent. And set on this, you know, divided America, which is, you know, I would say some great science fiction and fantasy is told in metaphor, right? A divided America. It's literally a divided America here. Our story is being told in the modern day, but in a world where the South was never defeated and slavery continues in some modern form to this day. And Benioff and Weiss are listed as, it's sort of an idea that they thought was going to be a movie. The press release very clearly highlights two other people who are deeply going to be involved in the development and writing of the show, which are Nichelle Tramble-Spellman and Malcolm Spellman. And I read the press release and I was like, oh, see, they're trying to get out in front of being accused of two white guys writing a story about slavery in America by saying there are also African-American writers who are deeply involved in the creation of this world. All the stories about this ignored them, just talked about Benioff and Weiss. Everybody got really angry. And to the credit of Joe Adalian at Vulture, he basically got HBO to get them all on the phone, all four of them, who are in that press release and talk about the project in more detail. And you know, it was very much like HBO sending the message, like, are you getting it yet? We know that this could be really bad, and it might seem like it could be really bad, but we know, and it's not going to be. Now, whether that's actually true is open to interpretation, but I think it's interesting, like, they tried and it didn't get the message out there, so they tried again to say, we are not going to do a story about modern day slavery in America and not have African American voices and experiences in the, you know, as producers of the show, which is yeah, good, right? Like, good. That's step one. So, what do you think about this whole thing?
Well, there were a couple of missteps here. I think a lot of the critics and TV people who tweeted it out basically said, you know, in a short form, basically said, "Oh my God, this is a real show from HBO from basically the white producers of a Game of Thrones. This is their next show." So there definitely was the not including the fact that this married couple, this African-American couple, were actually creators and executive producers on the show. Well, they probably are not going to get creative credits probably, but they're definitely executive producers and they're going to run the rooms and all this stuff. So that part was not adequately displayed. On the other hand, I don't think the HBO press release did a great job of, like, selling it, but, like, the point here is credit to Joe. Everybody followed up, including THR. I've known Joe a long time. I wanted to give him proper credit last night because I think that he's the one who spearheaded this. and even for me, it was like part of the story was a journalism story because they give him about a half an hour with four people on a phone. It's hard enough to know which you know, Benioff or Weiss, which one's which, much less four people. And he didn't mess around with any there was no throat clearing by Joe Adalian. He got to the essential questions. He was direct. He was to the point. He stayed on topic, did not drift. I thought that was very good, concise. And I think that they explained it in a way that was the best that HBO could have hoped for. And there obviously there was tons of follow-up stories about that. Now, beyond that, here's the thing. Anybody who's a creator should be able to create whatever they want. I don't think you can censor art or topics or ideas, or you shouldn't be doing that prior. I think everybody has a right to say, well, this sounds like a terrible idea. I absolutely think that's fine. And some people who did look at the press release, I think they, you know, I think it remains to be seen whether the Spellmans are as big a player as everybody thought, or right, were people accurately saying these two are a cover
providing cover for the white producers that they're like, we can't go. Yeah, it's very easy to look at that press release and say, of course, they brought in a couple of black writers in order to give themselves cover. The interview, Joe Adalian's interview, is very much like, no, we've known them for a decade and we wanted to work with them on a show, and they have perspectives that we don't have, and we're all going to get in a room and work on this together. And that's great. They said the right thing. We'll see what happens, right? But that sounds good, because I think you can't make a show like this. I think I agree with you. I think you can make a show like this. I disagree with people who are like, oh, in this time we shouldn't be talking about it. It's like, oh my God, in this time, this is the kind of show that could be exactly the kind of show to comment on where we are as a society. It could be lacerating and make us examine things about ourselves that we don't like to see. It could be really great. It could also be terrible, because it's art, you know, and sometimes that it's good and sometimes it's bad. But I don't think you can do this show and just have white people making it like it's about slavery. You cannot take something that is a fundamental part of the African American experience to this day and just have it be a couple of white guys and their conception of it. So I'm glad they brought these other writers on board who have a long history with them and a long history of writing TV. And it's great. But boy, they got to be in the room and have a voice. And I guess we're not going to really know until if this thing ever makes it, whether that's actually the case. But I don't know how you can successfully do a show like this without those voices in the room.
Yeah, it's and yeah, I mean, I still think that there's some interesting parsing out of how it all happened. It's definitely the idea was definitely the Benioff and Weiss, but yeah. And also they're smart guys and they're smart writers and they're good writers and they can get it done. Bringing people in for cover, that may be a separate story. The bigger story, I think, is going to be the why of it. Like, I think it's. And they got to this in Joe's story, and they got to it in all the follow-up stories from THR and everybody else who did them. And that is that, you know, they're saying, hey, look, this is an idea that got our blood pumping. It got us a little bit of afraid. It got us thinking that this is, like, ambitious and it's never been done. Well, not exactly never been done. You know, there's been all kinds of old history stuff, Man in the High Castle being the most recent. But I think they were super excited about the idea. My question, when I looked at that, it was like, oh, wow. Okay, guys. I mean, that's – you're going to put a lot on the line because I think that it's a really difficult story to tell that story in any way that – I mean, everything has to be perfect, Jason. Yep. Like, the casting has to be spot on. The bent of the storytelling can't be the white heroes save – you know, the North or the South.
Absolutely.
Right? And so you can't have what Hollywood has traditionally done all the time. And that is, like, basically, you know, have this sense of the white hero coming in, or somehow the African American slave story is told through a white lens.
Right. Right. It's about it's the white man who saved the group of slaves or whatever it is.
Where
it's like,
was.
Oh boy, the white, it's another story about white people. And even though this is a fundamentally black story, part of the black experience in America. And then, of course it's told through the eyes of a white guy, right?
Yeah. You can't, and it's just been done so many times.
So many times.
And that's the big worry here. And my feeling is, like, even if you think you can do this, even if you think this is a really great idea, I mean, it is fraught with peril. And you're definitely going to have people who will never watch it. They will not buy into it. You are, as HBO looks at this, and I'm sure they thought of this, but I'm not sure they thought that the backlash, even though they said they thought it would be big, I don't think they thought it was going to be this big, because they would have had those guys at the ready. Mm-hmm. Or they would have presented it some other way rather than just putting a press release out. They would have had them at press tour and they would have had four people on stage and it would have gone a whole lot better.
Yep.
We are what? Like 2 weeks away from being able to do that? I mean, it's kind of crazy.
You got to wonder what is going on with that. Because they could have told this story more effectively and it did not come across that way at all.
Yeah, you could have told the story in less than a week at TCA, mm-hmm. and it would have been perfect. So I don't know what's happening because you know, cable's going first. So and HBO is, like, I think on Wednesday or Thursday. So it's pretty quick. So a press release makes me think they did not think the controversy was going to be this big. And here's where it gets to be really dicey. Obviously, I'm one of the people who always say, "Hey, ratings don't matter. HBO doesn't work on that model." But at some point, if you were going to drop potentially a huge chunk of your audience, and an audience that you, if as storytellers, you want them to see it, to see what you, how you're approaching this topic from a different perspective. But, you know, it's so white hot, and no pun intended, that, like, people are not going to touch it, and they're going to not want to see this version of it. And if you're HBO, you have to think, like, is it really worth it to, like, alienate such a large part of the audience? Even if the show turns out to be great, they're not going to watch it. And so, oh, man, this day and age, platinum age of TV, you can get something somewhere else. It's very risky on all parts.
It's a gamble. I mean, I feel like Benioff and Weiss, it's a huge gamble for them to say, no, this is what we want our next project to be. I mean, it's interesting in the sense that they're saying, we kind of want to do a world-building genre show, but we don't want to go back to fantasy. We want to do something different that feels different, that can have that different setting. And HBO obviously wants to be in business with them, so they're like, yes, we'll do it. They've got the clout right now. And it's interesting that they chose this project. And you know what? If they pull it off, then more power to them. But there's no way to look at this and not think this is an enormous gamble. And I'm tempted to ask you, so I will. What percentage chance you would get? Would you guess that this thing's ever going to make it all the way and drop as a series in HBO in a couple of years?
I think that's the question to ask, and I'm glad you asked it because I think you're thinking the same thing I am. Especially,
I mean, there's no script, right? There's a feature film script that they have in their trunk from like 5 or 10 years ago, and they've now got like this spun up where they've got some partners. Presumably, they'll find some more writers. They'll put together a writers' room. They're doing the world building, but they're also doing the last season of Game of Thrones. So, like, when is there a pilot script? When is there is there going to be a pilot commitment, or are they going to do a series commitment? Are they going to do the series scripts? It's like there's lots of steps. They are not like this is an early announcement, like a really early announcement. There's so many places where if there's any sign that this is just not going on the rails, where somebody like HBO or the producers could be like, no, we're not going to move forward with this. And I really wonder, like, this could be really interesting, but I feel like this is not one of those things where it's like, we already got a script, we're going to pilot, we're casting actors, we're ready to go. It's like, there are lots of gates that could close on this project.
God. Yeah, that's when I, so last night when I read Joe's piece and saw the quotes that basically they said, where they clearly said there are no scripts, that's nothing's written, they had this, they have a movie script, but they're going to make a TV series out of it, and they have to, as you said, they have world building to do. This is what these guys do super well, and you could get a sense of, like, as soon as I read that, I was like, oh no, but no, never gonna happen.
They asked about the second. So it's like in the third Civil War is coming, and they're like, what's the second Civil War? And they're like, well, yeah, our thought was that there would have been a second Civil War at some point, so we put that in there, but we haven't really decided yet. And I'm like, wow, this is as premature an announcement as you could possibly get, that they're like, oh, world building, we're still building it. We don't know. We just have a kind of an idea. And like, I have to say, why did this get announced again? Get announced unless somebody had, there was a rumor or something and they're like, all right, we're just going to confirm it and rush something through. But it's like this, Yeah, I mean, again, I think there is a chance that if it gets made, that it could be great because these guys know what they're doing, that science fiction as social commentary is incredibly powerful. And I think we saw with Westworld, like HBO being persistent and letting their creators work on something that seems like it might be going off the rails or being kind of an old or weird idea. Like, you sometimes those bets pay off. Like Westworld, my hopes for Westworld were really low and they did a great job with it. So maybe they could do something great here. What's interesting, though, is that this isn't one of those things like, well, we'll see next year when it premieres. It's very much like, we'll see if it can pass through the 5 tests it needs to get through before they even start casting actors. So,
yeah, and I think too, Jason, a couple of the things that stand in the way that are going to be huge are already what's happened. The initial backlash, which, again, I don't think they expected. Otherwise, we would have seen this presented in a different way. I think there are going to be some, you know, Casey Bloys is no stranger to controversy. He's taken over at some tough things, but like, I think that he's a good guy. I think he's working his way through this, but I also think he's a guy who took over, he's the one who had, look, he scrapped things that his predecessors, you know, like Vinyl, and he's just said, look, we're never going to turn this around. We can't turn this ship, dinosaur ship, around, right? Because all the money's been spent. He's a smart guy that way. I would say, I can't speak for him. I can't read his mind. But here's what I would think. I think now that this is blown up, and we're going to see him for a half an hour in the executive session at 3:00, I think on Wednesday or Thursday, as TCA kicks off, and you know exactly what the first question is going to be. So the entire half hour, I mean, people definitely have other questions they want to ask about HBO, but that is going to be the one, and people are going to run with it. So they need to really get themselves on the right page. This is what I would say. They are so far from getting where they were, and he had to sit through Westworld being rebooted. Remember that, right? So, and it wasn't because there was a lot of problems on Westworld. It was because the creators, Nolan and Joy, were basically saying, listen, we want to make a brilliant series, and this back story and the Bible is really complicated. We're not getting it quite right. We're running into story things where, like, well, would that happen? And if we have them do this in the pilot, can we not turn around later and wish we hadn't have done that? And so they stopped production and they got it right as they could, because I think that first season is really excellent and all those Emmy nominations certainly are validation. But they shut it down and they got a lot of grief for that. So I cannot imagine that Casey wants to go into this thing that has to be, everything has to tick off, every box has to be perfectly done from casting to tone, and have it shut down if you're not going to get there. So do you even go into that headache, or do you just like green light it, deal with everything at press tour as best you can, and then when everything, all the white noise, no pun intended, goes away and you have a chance to sit down with those guys, do you not at some point and say, you know what, boys, we love your work, I don't think this is the smartest choice you two could make, and what else have you got? So I would not be surprised if this thing very quietly, right, but not immediately, goes the way.
Now, I think you're right. I do think they have an opportunity here, and I think the backlash is potentially constructive,
yes,
mm-hmm, for the four producers as well. That obviously they seem to understand these issues in a way that whoever decided to just put out that press release did not.
Right.
And if they want to, right, they could use the backlash and say, this is why we need to do this right, mm-hmm, and use it as a tool with HBO and as a touchstone among themselves to say, if we're going to do this, we got to do it right. We don't want to blow it, and be much more aware of what the issues are here. It's also possible that, yes, at some point, somebody is going to be like, you know what? It's just not like this is the wrong way to approach these issues. Because I think they would say that if they realize that by getting into this kind of a story, they are going to inadvertently make thoughts about like an alternate confederacy or something like that generate kind of heat in racist circles and be seen as a positive, even though it's a negative. If they feel like they're like, whoa, wait a second, you know, this is not the time after all, that they have a chance, right, to kind of pull out. But the flip side of that is that this backlash, better that happen now when they're in the conception process and they can figure out like, do we want to do this? And if we're going to do it right. And we'll see.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. And oh boy, like who knows? But I can tell you that, I hope my lunch with Casey is still on. I also had a lunch right after he finished his session of sort of explaining away some of the early concerns with Westworld and other issues at HBO. And that poor guy, as the first one, he handled it perfectly. I mean, he did a perfectly good job being overwhelmed. No one does super great on that stage their first time. But we're back again, and I have a lunch scheduled with him, so we'll see if that sticks.
All right.
I think it will. He's a good guy. He's a stand-up guy. So is HBO.
All right. Should we do some letters?
Yeah, right? I mean, that was a pretty big deal. A lot of TV in
there's
that little mix.
Yeah, mm-hmm. a lot there. Got a solid half hour just on that stuff. But let's move on then to some letters, unless you want to Columbo me. No? No? All right.
I want to Columbo you. No,
so,
I'm good.
Our friend Mike Vogon Poetry tweeted at us, our MVP, from the 716, and said, I love People of Earth, but I'm wondering why they put small amounts of adult content in it, which push it over into TVMA. Is this just so that the show is cool? Because it seems flawed to me, like go full on raunchy or allow it to appeal to a wider audience. So his thought is, this thing is so barely TVMA and it doesn't need to be, so why is it? Any thoughts about that one?
Well, I mean, there's definitely I think that's a good question, because there's definitely a school of thought is like, you just don't dip your toe in, you either go in all the way, and I don't think it really needs it. It's like straight up comedy. It's quirky. It's not straight up just laugh. But I don't know, boy. That is a good question, because it doesn't need it. I think the additional problem for the show is. And I unfortunately, I guess I don't watch enough of other TBS and TNT shows to know this, but I was really disappointed that people prior to Monday could not go on, either Netflix or Hulu or whatever and binge that first season. Mm-hmm. They have to go through the TBS site with ads, and no one wants to do that anymore. Well, some people do, I guess, but the majority of people who do streaming a lot are going to be like, nope. So that you want to sell it. It's really hard to sell a good show these days. And if you don't give access to it, how do you make that second season work? So yeah, there's some issues here for sure.
Mm. Related to that is our pal Larry from the 916. Who also sent in a picture of himself with the TVTM logo next to Edinburgh Castle in Scotland. So
nice.
So Flat Bastard in Edinburgh. Thank you, Larry. And he says, here's my question. What is still taboo for basic cable to show? With new shows like Snowfall and Claws leading the way, all profanity seems to be in play, as are simulated sex and drug use. Nudity from the back and side is also common. Is showing full, mostly female nudity the only differentiation between HBO and A&E? And if so, when do you think that will happen? Thanks. I think he's looking forward to it. Thanks. Love the show, Larry from the 916. So the question.
Yes, and A&E does not make scripted series, so they're out. But if you're saying, when will FX do stuff like that, I think it's complicated. There is not a law that says you can't drop the F word on cable. But if you are an ad-supported channel like FX, which would be the one most likely to do something like that, you have to make a choice. Is this going to alienate my advertisers? Is this going to is this going to hurt me as an ad-supported channel trying to do premiere quality programming? I know that they used to not do F-bombs and they never said the C-word. But what you also can't really get away with, you can't do full frontal, male or female. And to my knowledge, I don't think that's ever happened on a basic cable, but you can certainly do that on Stars and you can do it on Netflix. Any subscription service can do that. And then you just decide to quit your subscription if that's the case. I don't think that you want to run the risk of, because cable tries to police itself. They had what they call a safe harbor, or they used to have what they called a safe harbor from 8 to 9, which kind of mirrored the so-called family hour. Neither of them are laws that exist. But there is some self-monitoring.
Yeah, every network's got their own standards and practices department too. But yeah, I do wonder if there are specific deals in the ad sales that are like, this is the stuff we won't be put up against. Mm-hmm. And so maybe some advertisers don't want to be on TVMA at all. Maybe some do. But I bet you even there, they're like, no nudity. None of this word is not allowed or whatever for some advertisers. I bet exactly that that's the case, and that has something to do with it. And they probably staked it out. If there's anybody out there who actually works in standards and practices for a cable network, I would love for you to contact us, because I'd really like to know, because this has been a constant question for us. Is there used to be very clear rules, because there were FCC rules, but those were all for broadcast, and then they're not for cable. The rules are different. But there clearly are different rules. We don't know why, and we don't know what they are, but they're clearly different. It's interesting.
Oh, between broadcasting and cable?
Well, and between basic cable and pay cable.
Yes. I mean, because you can get away with it. I think what can you do if you're a basic cable and you have ads? And then compare it to apples to apples what will TNT show or not show with FX. They're both basically doing the same thing. Broadcast can't do it because they
are regulated by the FCC. There are obscenity issues with broadcast because they go out over the airwaves. As weird as that is actually in the US how it's handled. Is they go over the airwaves, and that's a public trust, and it's different if you're on cable.
Exactly. So that's why they don't do it there. Right. You can lose your license.
Right. But I would bet you that USA Network standards are not the same as FX and obviously aren't the same as Netflix or HBO.
Yes,
and
exactly.
That's interesting. I wonder sometimes about that even on Netflix. You do creatively have to make a decision of what level is this show going to be, and is it going to be the Marvel shows are interesting in that they are you know, R-rated, basically. They have, mm-hmm. there are limits to what they'll do, but they're way above, like, being a PG-13. They go beyond that. So everybody has to make those decisions. But clearly, if you want to go all the way on Netflix, you basically can, but mm-hmm. you can't on FX necessarily or USA. I don't know.
Right. I mean, just look at you know, Sense8. I mean, wow.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that was full frontal male
all the way out.
The time. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, and didn't leave a lot to, the sex scenes didn't leave a lot to the imagination. So right. Yeah, it's just, they play by different rules.
All right. We got a funny tweet from Stephanie.
Okay.
Who quoted you from last week's podcast as saying, I think it's really interesting that Genius got into the Emmys from National Geographic. Good for them. And her response is, I'll take that. Because she is in publicity at Nat Geo. So she was like very grateful that you said, good for them.
Yeah. Come on. That's good. Yay yeah. for Nat Geo. I love Nat Geo. Come on. Everybody does good work. And Discovery, too. Yeah. Solid.
We heard from TV lovers on Twitter who said, guys, light CBS shows can be fun. I like Salvation so far, even if there are a lot of not a thing moments. Get over yourselves. These days it's all hate it or love it. Critics tend to be like that. I think that regular people enjoy a healthy mix of shows. So I'm going to be the Tim interpreter here and say that when Tim says that he doesn't want to review CBS shows and all that, he's not saying that you can't enjoy them. In fact, I think you've said very clearly, like, you know what you're going to get. And I think your point was, like, you don't want to review them because there are more artful shows to review that will generate more interesting TV reviews. And also, in some ways, this stuff is kind of critic proof. Like, you know the brand name, you know what's on the package. And also that you seem to be at a point where you're like, I don't even know how to judge these kinds of shows. Like, you give me a James Patterson Zoo, or you give me you know, whatever this show is, Salvation. And it's like, okay, like you kind of like don't even know what to say anymore. I didn't get the sense from you that it was like, if you watch the show, you're a dummy. It was more like, you know, I think you even said, like, go ahead and watch it. You know what you're going to get. Like, this is what this is. It's comfort food. It's like a TV lover says, it's light entertainment. It's a summer CBS show. Like, we know what it is. And if you like it, that's fine. I watch comforting sci-fi shows all the time that are not the greatest art, but they're nice and they make me happy, and I watch them sometimes. Yeah.
And I, the other thing that all that is true. All that is actually a good
all right.
tea leaf reading.
Tim interpreter. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, that was very good.
I'll be your PR. I'll be your representative in case there's any scandals or stuff. I'll be out in front of it.
Yeah. And I have said in the past too, that, you know, I'll watch Blacklist and I'll watch Elementary and things. Cause when you want to turn your brain off, but be entertained and to have something well done, that's fine. I just don't think that, I don't think that show in particular is well done. And what I don't understand is people like, yeah, I don't want to review those things, because part of the reason as a reviewer, I keep thinking, why would you want to make this show? I mean, maybe if you're incapable of making, Handmaid's Tale or something, I get that. Everybody has their limitations. Not every baseball player is a home run hitter or, you know, 45 steals a season or whatever. So you have to know what you're good at and what your tool set is. But for viewers, I don't understand it. I think there's so much greatness that other than just, and I, as I wrote in that review, other than just giving yourself a break, which you have to do time and again from all these shows that are demanding so much of your attention. I mean, like Game of Thrones, it's super entertaining, but you really have to remember who was aligned with what and what happened in the past and what would that mean if these people are getting together. You have to really be kind of thinking, and it's very true of Better Call Saul and other shows like that. And so, yeah, if you need a break, you have to take it. My question is, like, if you're not just taking a break from shows, if you're actively seeking out a show like Salvation, I don't really want to be your... I just don't know what you're doing.
All right. You can still listen to the podcast, though, but Tim doesn't.
Yeah.
I think I can see the argument, too, which I think, actually, Tim, this would make one of those great lists that can replace the power rankings,
which is,
okay, so you want a light CBS show and Salvation. I did hear from somebody, by the way, who was very mad that I lumped in Extant with these other CBS shows because they're like, Under the Dome. Now, that was a dumb show, but Extant was pretty good. And like, okay, fair enough. I'm not going to argue that one with you. But I would say, wouldn't it be interesting to say, you can watch Salvation. You can do that. But maybe some of these other things will also provide you like what you're looking for. If you're looking for lightness, if you're looking for turn off your brain, but they're going to be way better than this one. Like that, because that's part of the argument here is not that this isn't fine. It's like, even if just what you're looking for is this, there's better of this than exactly. this show.
Exactly.
Like there's a better turn off your brain show than Salvation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
That could be a list. That could be one of your great lists that you do when you master the list format of the THR website.
Well, I was told today, just for
breaking news,
I did bring up the fact that about these lists and possibly, you know, maybe they're in the not too distant future. There would be a Power Rankings versions, plural. I asked about how I would talk to maybe some tech people about doing that. And I was told that just write it up. They'll format it for you.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, well. Even better. So keep your eye out.
All right. The story continues. One of these days you're going to post something in a list and everybody's going to be like, aha. All the podcast listeners will be like, I see what's happened. I feel for that guy who's down in the basement at the THR web service building who has to put in your story is into, uh-huh. into
I think he was not part of that email chain.
No.
Because once he finds it, he's going to be like, wait, what? What am I doing?
What am I doing? Yeah. Now, although as somebody who did that, I also see the other side of it, which is like, oh no, don't let him format it.
Right.
Just give it to Jimmy. Jimmy will put it in. Don't let Tim near the thing
don't
that makes the
it.
List.
No, he's
the list machine.
More work.
He'll break the list machine if we do that. So don't even.
Yeah.
Although to be fair, I gave you that wacky HTML template and you used that for years and didn't break the Chronicles website the THR website. So,
no.
You know, I think you can be trusted, but. They're just going to let Jimmy the intern do it. That's fine.
I think so.
I like how we're moving forward with this plan. Alan, my old nemesis from the 660, wrote in. And he said, I enjoyed the Emmy nomination discussion, but disagreed vehemently with you two at times. Of course,
Ooh.
We are nemeses.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm really disappointed in you, Alan, because he listed a whole bunch of things that he agrees with us about.
Oh, he's got to work on that nemesis.
I know.
Thing.
I mean, what kind of nemesis agrees with you? He says, I agree that Stranger Things is okay but overrated and the hype about Barb is dumb. I agree the San Junipero episode of Black Mirror is really great. I agree with you that House of Cards has not been good since the start of the second season and its nomination is a travesty. I agree that Tree of Life is a terrible overrated film. So that's good. That's for you. Take that, Terrence Malick. And
that's
he
awesome.
Says, I disagree. He says Bill Maher should win his category. And this is where he says it's too. Don't lump Under the Dome in with Extant.
Right.
And he said also to dismiss anyone who likes a couple network dramas. As someone not worth knowing, Tim wants 10 nominees in each category. Mine and Best Drama would be Rectify, This Is Us, The Americans, Better Call Saul, The Leftovers, Fargo, Extant. Really? Westworld, Transparent Legion. You're just trolling us now. Come on, Alan. Anyway, does that really make us completely different kinds of TV viewers? His point is he's got some things in there that you'd be like, no, no, no. And then he's got things in there. And this goes back to what we were saying earlier, right? Which is, you know, everybody gets their own taste and everybody gets to like different things. And I think... your palate, you know, you got to have variety. And there's nothing wrong with that, having some variety in the stuff that you like.
Absolutely.
It can't be all the same stuff. Like, I love The Wire, but if every show I watched was The Wire, I would stop watching television.
Yes, it would be very difficult. It would be hard to sleep at night.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
The Wire channel. It's just shows like The Wire all the time.
Just totally gritty, dark.
It's just David Simon sitting there sitting on a chair in front of a camera telling you all the things that are wrong with the world.
That's bleak.
Anyway, thanks, Alan, for being a nemesis. Richard, baking in the 209. It's very hot up there. I'm from the 209. I'm OG from the 209. He says, Tim, I've been listening and reading your reviews for years now. If I mention a show, my wife will snarkily ask, oh, did Tim Goodman like it? So thanks for all the great viewing advice. I'd like to give a shout out to Jason. Oh, this letter took a turn. Hey now. So for years, he's been talking about how good The Flash is, but I had no interest. This summer, we were looking for a show we could watch with my 11-year-old, and it's perfect. He's graduated from all the hokey Disney shows and needed something to challenge him. He loves it, and I get to pause it many times an episode and tell him all about the geek out references that are in the show. Thanks for the recommendations. Thank you, Richard. And just be prepare yourself because The Flash gets worse as it goes. Anyway,
Aww.
Yeah. First season is great, though. It's a good family show. good fun show to watch with your kids. Julie from the 312 wrote in, says, "Hey guys, Julie from the 312. I don't know much about how TV gets made, so I'm legitimately curious about this show." Now I have to make sure I find the name of the show, because she put that in her title. Friends from College. Do you know about Friends from College?
Dan reviewed it, but okay, I can answer that question. But yeah, so I know about it through his review.
Okay, her question is
the similar reactions from other critics.
Her question is, how is it so bad? I love 4 of the 6 stars. The premise is acceptable. They presumably had a budget. Even the fact that not a single one of the characters is likable doesn't preclude the show from being entertaining. See, you're the worst. But why didn't someone see this at some point and be like, oh, no, this is awful. Let's change it. I'm only 4 episodes in, but parts of the plot are farcical, for lack of a better word. Is it hard to see how bad it is until it's too late? Or do the people involved think a tired plot line about an irresponsible pet sitter / dead pet / doppelganger replacement is somehow compelling TV in 2017? I honestly just don't understand why no one fixed it. I feel like even I could fix it, and I know nothing about anything. Is it too late to fix these things by the time they're apparent? This is a great failure analysis question, is how do you get to the point where a show like this is a bomb, where somebody doesn't say, oh no, 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 we have to fix this. It's really bad, and it needs to stop. How does it get to this point where it gets all the way through the process?
Well, that is a failure analysis Hall of Fame topic. That's basically everything kind of in a nutshell.
Right. Who didn't say anything? Like who right. remained silent and allowed yeah. this to happen?
Who among you did not speak up? that this has historically been my there's so many shades to this question, but that has historically been one of my fascinating things about the industry, because I still have not got a perfectly coherent I understand this answer. I've got variations on it from people, because I've asked people, like, I've asked actors, when you're saying these lines, does it not occur to you that this is bad? And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't, on the kind of the same topic. Like, sometimes an actor can sense it, and then sometimes they are saying bad stuff and they can't sense it, but they also don't know how the other parts are working. And I bet the onus lies on the people who are creating the show. So there, you have to say, who is watching this and thinking, oh, we've made a terrible mistake, and then now we need to course correct really quickly. Like, whose responsibility is that? So those are always remain things that I'm writing about. The fresh part of her question, and the freshness of that I think this, you know, this topic now becomes, is that I really wonder, and I think I might spend part of this TCA finding this out. Netflix is turning out so many shows. I mean, do they really have the staff necessary to say, you know what? Here's some good notes. I think we can fix this, you know, before it gets... Because they drop these things, right? And they're all there. So somebody has to, in the process, say, you can't just let people... And I'm worried that that's happening. You can't let people go off and make all these shows and then bring them back and then they suck. You have to have somebody, theoretically... like somebody working at a network or a channel saying, ooh, wow, that was a good first hour. And then it all went to hell and none of these plot lines make sense. And all these character motivations do not align. And can we please fix this? So my question to Netflix people is, how many people are on that? Like, and how much, and the same thing for Amazon, how diligently are you staying after this kind of thing? So it's going to be, that's a topic, definitely.
Having seen, and you see this stuff too sometimes, having seen director's cuts and ungraded stuff and things without music and, you know, other stuff that's not done, I can understand how, like, you could, as an actor, let's say, or even as somebody seeing dailies, not be able to tell, or how it would be harder to tell that something was a disaster. Because I've seen stuff ungraded and no music, and it seemed really awful. And then I saw it again in the final form, where the green screen is filled in and the music's playing in the background and they've looped the dialogue, and I'm like, oh, actually that's fine. It's not bad at all anymore. I just couldn't picture it. Like, I feel like there is some aspect of making TV, which is you got to take it on faith that it's going to come together. And then when it comes together and it's terrible, you're like, oh, You know, right? And that you may not, I think the really talented people can tell and course correct, right? But I think that it's harder than it may seem because they're not seeing the finished product. They're seeing something that they're used to coming together in a way that maybe it doesn't sometimes. I don't know. I wasn't going to bring up Twin Peaks this week, but I think about Twin Peaks sometimes about this because there are very good actors in that show there are good performances in the Twin Peaks reboot and or relaunch. And there are bad performances in there. And some of the bad performances are from, like, really good actors. And it makes me wonder, like, is that a bad performance? Maybe I shouldn't blame the actor. Like, is this the script? Is it the director? Uh-huh. Is it how the show was made? The fact that Naomi Watts is doing these long takes in these, like, overly lit shots that don't move, that go on for 5 minutes. Like, it may not be her fault. In fact, it's probably not her fault because she's done great work before. And so I wonder about that, too. That gives me pause where it's like, you know, why did this happen? And maybe it's just because this is the way David Lynch wants it. And so that's it. I don't know. So I guess what I'm saying is, having seen some stuff in the process of being made, I would say it's harder than you'd think to intuit that it's going to be bad because it all is kind of not finished at that point. And you take some of it on faith that it'll be done competently.
Yeah, I think that, there are certainly, again, gradations to this whole concept, but I would say that you have to have good executives, and I think the onus is, and if you don't have good executives, that's your fault. I mean, that's like being a company. You're not a good manager, or you haven't hired the right people for the job. If your comedy development and your drama development people are churning out things that constantly need work or they are unsatisfactory. I think some of it is difficult to see. Mostly for me, I think unless a show is terribly, terribly written, which I think is pretty obvious that I think the hardest thing to understand is to judge quality on is just the script. Right. And if you're trying to save money, that's where you say, not going on this. But there are a lot of like, you can see a terribly written script, or you should be if you're in this business at this level. You should be able to see that. But there are decent scripts and like pretty good scripts. And then you don't know after that, like, will the acting, will it make it? Will it up this thing?
Yeah, elevate the material. Elevate. Like a great cast, great casting can take a pedestrian comedy and make it a machine, right? Like great casting and directing can take that boring comedy script and turn it into something amazing. But you got to take it on faith at that point, which is not.
Yeah,
great.
If I was the writer who said, "Can you up this?" and then and an actor said, "What if I said elevate here?" You'd be like, "Oh, excellent!
Yeah,
you've made the script better." So that you don't know when that can happen. Or look, there's plenty of times when there's dialogue that's like, "Ooh, it's decent, but not great." And then you have a great actor or two can turn that into gold. They can spin that into something really sweet. So there's all that kind of stuff. I think the writing is the hard part, but then, you know, you have to look beyond that too. It's like you said, this talking about the friends from college, it's just like, it just never got good and it just continued to get bad. You have to notice that trend or you're not good at your job. So that's my sense.
And I think there's always going to be some luck, but like the places that produce good stuff and the producers who produce good stuff consistently, I mean, it's a little bit like Moneyball, baseball analysis, where like you can look at the show and say, oh, this show is good and this show is bad. But the people who are really good at this and are consistent with it are the ones who have that extra vision, the ability to, they're not just good writers, but like you've got producers and other development executives who are like, able to see what it's going to be when it's done and make a judgment on it. And because clearly that is the case, because there's some, it's not perfect, but some executives are very good at it and they have a great track record. And that's got to be part of what it is they've got a system and they've got some intuition, or they've surrounded themselves with people who are better at that. And I think people who aren't as good at that are more likely to make clunkers because they can't see it. But mm-hmm. it's not an easy process, I guess. I do wonder sometimes with TV, since it's so complicated, if you get to something like Friends from College, is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. And just say, oh no, well, don't put let's not put any more effort into this. It's going to be a piece of garbage, and we're already so far down the line that let's just cut our losses and do the minimum and put it out there and then walk away. Because I do think there comes a point where you're not going to go back and reshoot it. You're not going to change the scripts. You kind of missed your chance, and now you've seen the final product, and you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
because that totally happens, right? Where an executive sees a show and is like, oh no, and so what are they going to do? Like, cut back on the marketing budget a little bit, and or some movie executives sometimes they'll up the marketing budget because they want to make as much money as they can opening weekend because they know the word of mouth is going to be terrible. So there are other approaches you can take, but that's got to be the worst feeling in the world though when you see something that you've bankrolled and you see the final product and you're like, oh.
Like, oh
no.
Yes.
You know, and you got to smile and say, oh no, we're really excited that the show is on our network. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Yep. Cue the Job, I've made a huge mistake.
Yeah.
Memes.
Because they're not going to say, hey, this show's kind of crappy. Don't watch it. Like, they're not going to say that. they're going to promote their show. And
right.
Yeah. That's a tough job. I guess it's great when you get some show that you didn't entirely know what you were going to get, and then you see it and you go, oh my God, this is great. Like, that's the flip side of it.
Uh-huh. Like, I think maybe Stranger Things?
Yeah, right. Well, I was going to say, my friend Anthony, who is a comic book writer, graphic novelist, and his the Charlize Theron movie that's coming out, Atomic Blonde, and coming out next week. Everybody go see it. My friend Anthony wrote the book that it's based on. His experience with that, and I'm not telling tales out of school, although he tells the story on this weekend's Incomparable episode, in fact, if people want to check it out. It seems like what happened was they liked it and they made it, but they made it kind of on an indie budget, and then they saw the finished product and tested it and they're like, oh, and they upped it to the like the pro level marketing budget, like the blockbuster marketing budget, because they're like, oh no, this is good, like they, and that was one of those happy moments where they're like,
right,
this movie's much better than we thought it was going to be, let's ride this thing. And that's interesting that, you know, at that late stage after the thing is made, basically you can make some value judgments about, do we want to really put more money into this thing or not? And in mm-hmm. his case, his movie was very lucky. They're like, yeah, we do, it actually, people love it and it's a really good movie. But there is a flip side to that, which is like, why did this movie failed because the studio didn't support it? And it's like, no, I think you got it backward there. The studio didn't support it because it was a failure. But I don't know. Yeah. Funny business. Art, yeah. Commercialization of art is a funny business, isn't it?
Tough. Very tough.
All right. Well, you can reach us and join in the parade of questions to TVTM. We may get to some while Tim's in residence. We may not. I don't know. But send them on in anyway. Tweet at TVTM.
Mm-hmm.
Tim's at Bastard Machine. I'm Jay Snell. You can email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. And you can go on the Facebook group and write a post there at facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. And that's how you can reach us. Tim, I hope you have laid in provisions for your time. How long are you there? How many nights are you there?
I think it's 18 nights.
Oof.
Yeah.
It hurts more when you say that number out loud.
I know, right?
All right. But we'll get a couple of good podcasts in from
yes,
there.
Yes, I'm not going to do it old school. Like, I'm gonna take some breaks. Yeah.
Good.
Probably during the network side.
Yep.
I'll pass on this comedy. Bye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. You got to pace yourself to get through it. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for listening. Tim, have a good weekend and good luck at Press Tour.
Yes.
Bye, everybody.